afternoon and welcome. This is Mike Harris from Jeff Rentz Radio Network, and today is Monday, January 7th, 2013. And today, because of some of the things that are going on with our government and our world and the social constructs that we have to live within, you look at this noise that the Zionist Jews in Congress are making about infringing upon the Second Amendment. You look at this filth that comes out of Hollywood, this movie Django, where you know they have a black bounty hunter who gets paid to kill white people and things. And I thought I'd invite someone on who is a voice for reason and sanity when it comes to the majority of people in this country. And so I invited Harold Covington. Harold, how are you today?
Oh, pretty good, Mike.
Well, can you hear me okay? Is everything good?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, I'm trying out a new headset. Hopefully we'll get some improvement in our sound quality. But I just wanted to let you on, and I wanted to get your opinion on what's happening in our world, and why are these liberal Zionist gun grabbers making their move now?
Well, I think they have some idea as to what's in store for us over the next 4 years and longer. Now they've got their main man, what counts, reelected, and in theory at least, he doesn't have to worry about reelection anymore. And so they can go ahead and proceed with the agenda that they want to impose and have wanted to impose for the past, you know, 70 some odd years on this country. And before they can impose that agenda, at some point they've got to do something about the fact that there are 300 million privately held firearms in this country, because I think the liberals, the Democrats, the Jews, however you want to classify the establishment, the power structure, is planning on doing things that they are sufficiently intelligent to realize might provoke violent resistance, and they don't want white people to have anything to resist with. And this is why they're going after not just guns, but specific types of weapons. I checked out Senator Dianne Feinstein's website several days ago, and apparently she's going to be the one who introduces this latest gun control bill when Congress fully returns after Obama's second immaculation. And the plan apparently is to ban all semi-automatic weapons, and that includes handguns. Also, if you have a grandfathered semi-auto of some kind, you will have to register your weapons, register yourself as an owner of a semi-auto, and you will have to be fingerprinted by the FBI or some other secret police agency. So I think it's pretty clear that what the liberal democratic establishment in this country is doing is they're going after any privately held weapons that could be used to resist against the government, that could be turned against them. And of course,
Harold, we've seen this thing before. You look at what happened in Tsarist Russia when the Bolsheviks took over, and they killed 66 million white Christian Russians, and they didn't think a thing of it. 66 million of them they killed, and they disarmed them first, and then they slaughtered them en masse, and that's what's going to happen here.
As various philosophers have stated, those who don't remember the mistakes of the past are doomed to repeat them. As a people, we here in America simply don't pay attention to what's going on around us. And we're about to pay the price for that. We have let things slide for 60 years now. And
let me ask another question here. I've always been law-abiding. My most egregious offense ever had been a speeding ticket where I think I was doing 12 miles over the posted limit. That's it. I mean, that is as criminal as I've ever been in my entire life, period. In discussion. But if they do this and they infringe upon the Second Amendment and they break the social contract that I have that binds me with loyalty to my government, they're going to make a criminal out of me and many other people like me. Are they aware of hornet's nest that they're poking around with?
They're aware of it, but I don't think they care. They assume, based on our lousy performance for the past 60 years, that we simply aren't going to resist. They believe that they can do it now, that basically that white Americans are so cowed and so timid and so frightened and so physically lazy and apathetic that they can get away with it now. And I wish I could stand up and say with my hand over my heart that no, they're wrong, that we will resist. I have to admit I am not too sanguine about our chances, though. But as far as making everybody criminals, yeah, they did that once before. Remember Prohibition. They made everybody who wants to take a drink of beer or whiskey a criminal. And after about 14 years of Prohibition, they had sense enough to realize that wasn't working, and they repealed it. But this is something different. This thing with gun control is not about some great moral crusade against guns or gun violence or anything like that. Its purpose is to disarm the American people, by which, of course, we mean the white American people. I think we all know quite well that the Los Angeles Crips and the Bloods and the various Mexican drug cartels and
MS-13, the Mexican Mafia, yeah. The Latin Kings. They're not going to give up their guns. Good luck trying to get them away from them.
And that's not the intention of of this whole program of gun control, all the anti-gun propaganda, the laws, et cetera, et cetera. What they want to do is disarm the remaining white population of North America, because the white population is the one they're going after. The first thing that the Democrats, the liberals, again, the power structure, however you want to describe it, is going to go after is the white man's money. Basically, middle-aged and going on to elderly white people have the last reserves of privately held wealth in this country. And in order to create their neo-Marxist social welfare state, the Democrats, the ruling party, has to have that money. They're going to have to go after it. They're going to have to get your 401k. They're going to have to get your savings. They're going to have to get the money you got squirreled away under your mattress, etc. Because the alternative basically is to either borrow it or print it, and no one's going to lend to us anymore. So eventually they're going to have to just start printing money. But before they do that, they need to kill the goose that lays the golden eggs. They need to pillage and deplete the last privately held wealth in this country. And that's the sort of thing that just might provoke violent resistance if it gets too heavy. So that's another reason they want people disarmed.
Well, one of the things that I've been talking about with various friends of mine is that if a SWAT team shows up at my house at 2 o'clock in the morning to disarm me, I've got neighbors around me, and they're going to respond in kind.
But
so
that
if they're kicking down my door in the front and dealing with me in the house, they're going to have to deal with my neighbors outside the house who are going to pin them down. And quite frankly, these are some really irritated people who are quite angry with our own government right now.
Well, Mike, I hope that you're right. I really, really do. I would love to see armed resistance against this dictatorship, and I make no bones about that in my novels or everywhere else, but I wish I was a little bit more hopeful. I, unfortunately, have developed a rather low opinion of the common white man these days. I hope that when the gun raids actually happen, we will have the moral and physical courage to resist, but I'm a little bit dubious. For one thing, I doubt it's going to be right away that all of a sudden the SWAT teams are kicking in the doors. First, they've got to get the laws passed. Then they've got to diddle around with all the registration and all the BS, etc. And so it's like everything else. The liberals in this country have become past masters of what the communists call the salami slicer technique. They slice away our rights thin slice by thin slice. So I don't think it's going to be a case of Feinstein's law passes because they get 5 renegade Republicans in the House to pass it. That's all they need, by the way. Okay, also we got this law, and then hundreds of thousands of SWAT teams in body armor are descending on gun owners all across the country. It's going to be a slow process. But then again, they may have to accelerate it a bit so they can get and implement the rest of their agenda. But the way, I'm sure you know the old story about the frog in the boiling water. They're going to use
gun control.
And I hear the music.
You hear the music. We'll be right back in a few minutes with author Harold Covington. Be right back.
All right.
Good afternoon and welcome back. This is Mike Harris on the Jeff Rentz Radio, and today is Monday, January 7th, 2013. We're on with author Harold Covington, and Harold, we're talking about hornet's nests that the Marxists, the Bolsheviks in our Congress are about to start poking at with infringing upon the Second Amendment. And they illegitimate their own office by monkeying with Constitution of the U.S. Don't they see the flaw in their logic?
It's not a matter of logic. They have the power. They're going to do whatever the devil they want with it. They have an agenda, and their object is to implement that agenda. To the liberals, the Democrats, the Jews, again, the power structure, however you want to call it, the Constitution of the United States has always been an impediment. It's something that they want to get around, to get rid of. And now, in the past 4 years with Barack Hussein Obama, they have learned that they can just simply ignore it. I have said for a long time that a absolutely key turning point in this nation's history came about a year ago when Obama, looking for Hispanic votes, implemented the so-called DREAM Act by executive order, in essence by imperial decree, after Congress had rejected that same law twice. This is a clear, utterly blatant violation of the United States Constitution. He should have been impeached and dragged out of that office so fast it made his caramel-colored head spin, and he was not. Obama has learned that he doesn't have to obey the Constitution because no one will do anything about it. Now, this is why the Founding Fathers gave us the Second Amendment, so that when this very thing happened, we would have the weapons in our hands to force the government to live and work and exist by the Constitution. And we have not used it for that purpose. And this is why I say I really hope that you're right about hornet's nests. But even so, even let's assume that there are gun raids and that a few gun owners go down blazing, even that's not going to solve it, because you know, one or two or three or a dozen or even 100 old guys standing their ground in their farmsteads with their weapons collections isn't actually going to change anything the government does. This is why I wrote my Northwest novels. This is what I have been telling white people for a long time. I do not advocate, and I am very much against, scattered acts of pointless violence and bloodshed, not because I think they're morally wrong, but because they don't accomplish anything. When the white man in this country finally decides to resist, he has to do so with a goal. He has to have a political program. He has to have a strategy. It can't be just, well, I'm going to get my gun, I'm going to go get them bureaucrats. It doesn't work like that. Basically, the present power structure, which is in the control of liberals, Jews, and neo-Marxists, has to be removed, and something has to be put in its place, and if you read my Northwest novels, you'll see what I think should be put in its place.
I agree, and I that's one of the reasons I have you on, is because I think you've got one of the few workable plans that, if things get tough enough in this country, is probably a fallback position. I hate to see the country come apart, but I've been really dissatisfied with the direction we've been on, at least the last 50 years, since the murder of JFK in broad daylight in Daley Plaza.
Well, it goes back really farther than that. I know a lot of right-wingers kind of tend to argue, like medieval theologians, about how many angels can dance on the head of the pin. They argue about when the rot started. I personally, my favorite date as to when this country started to go down the tubes was April the 9th, I believe it was, 1861, when Abraham Lincoln called for 100,000 troops to use force to keep the South in the Union. At that point, the original Constitution as it existed, as it was created by the Founding Fathers, was completely abrogated. Unfortunately, the bad guys won in 1865, and ever since then, we really haven't had a proper constitutional republic as envisioned by men like Jefferson and Franklin and Washington. What we've had is an imperial presidency and a powerful central government in Washington, D.C., which was not the intention of the Founding Fathers. Another good date that you can select is 1913, when the Federal Reserve was created and when the powers that be at the time, for reasons I still don't fully understand, handed control of our money supply over to the Jews. Then there's 1933, when Roosevelt was elected and the whole New Deal thing, so forth and so on. But this is something that's been a long time coming. I see there is an agenda. It's been around for a long time, and what they're doing now, what they're going to be doing in the next 4 years, is implementing an agenda. And you can try to prevent it or impede it with constitutional arguments, with logical arguments. They don't care. They've got the power now. This is all about raw power. And now Obama and the Democrats have it, and they're going to use it. And as I've said, a lot of people think, well, we've still got the House of Representatives. That's still majority Republican. They can stop it. No, they can't. All that it takes, what I understand of their parliamentary rules, is a small handful of Republicans to break and go with the Democrats, and they can still pass pretty much anything they want. And if they don't, again, Obama has learned that he can't rule by decree. I would be surprised if this gun control law that Feinstein's coming up with does get beaten back in Congress, and if that's the case, Obama will simply sign an executive order telling the BATFA if he...
Hold the point, and we'll be right back in a couple minutes, okay?
Okay.
This is Mike Harris on the Jeff Rince Radio Network, and today is Monday, January 7th, 2013. We're on with... Before the break, you were talking about that they're going to pass, that Obama's going to, by executive order, by executive decree, repeal the Second Amendment.
Right. Really, all he has to do, instead of the executive branch of the government, is to sign an order to the BATFE, which, by the way, I understand correctly, has now been transferred from the Treasury Department to Homeland Security, and just sign an order saying, okay, you will begin seizing all magazines with a capacity higher than 10 rounds. You will do this, you will do that. How exactly it would work, I don't know, but it's just like he stopped the ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, from deporting illegal aliens by, again, executive order. He can start the BATFE confiscating high-capacity magazines, semi-automatic rifles. He can close down gun shows. He can riddle gun shows with informers and ATF observers, and just whatever he wants to do. He doesn't have to have a Congressional Gun Control Act in order to start interfering with the ownership and transfer of weapons. A lot of people don't realize there's something like 20,000 gun control laws in this country, state, local, and federal. And if he wants to, all he needs to do is order his mungoids or his goons to start enforcing existing laws, just like we don't really need an anti-immigration law in this country. All we need to do is start enforcing the laws we have. There's all sorts of ways that Obama and the dictatorship could get around the necessity of Congress passing a new gun control law. Now, they may pass it, but again, we are dealing here with a one-party dictatorship. There is no effective opposition. There is no way to stop these people from doing any damn thing they want. Except, of course, for the way that the Founding Fathers bequeathed to us through the Second Amendment, which is the way that we will not use. This next 4 years is going to be very interesting, put it that way.
No, I agree. I think it's going to be very interesting. I think it's going to be very tumultuous. And quite frankly, I think there's going to be a financial collapse thrown in there, too, just for good measure.
Oh, yeah.
Because the SOBs on Wall Street, who've been stealing from the people of the U.S. They've looted the pension funds. They've thrown 12 million people out of their homes to foreclosure. They've gamed the system so bad that retail investors no longer trust the stock market enough to get into it. They've yet to prosecute anybody and all that. But I think that when this $1.4 quadrillion dollar derivative bubble bursts, and it's going to burst, I think that we're going to be in a financial and economic freefall. And the question is, what's going to happen first? Are they going to seize guns first, or are they going to take the economy first?
I think they're going to make at least some attempt to go for the guns first, because they see what's coming probably better than we do. Yeah, I remember before the election, there were some very serious financial nabobs of various types, directors of central banks and major Wall Street figures, stating that if Obama was reelected and he continued on this insane spending spree, that the existing financial structure or infrastructure of the United States could last maybe another 2 years, but at some point during Obama's second term, the whole thing was just going to go down, because he's just plain going to run out of money. When he runs out of money, he's going to have to start printing it, which means we've got superinflation, so which is actually kind of the same thing as running out of money. We have to take a wheelbarrow full of cash down to Safeway to buy a loaf of bread, and it is going to be a five-star royal mess. And I think the regime knows this, and they do not want a lot of white Americans all pissed off because they've lost their home, they've lost their jobs, they've lost everything. The regime does not want those people to have a semi-automatic rifle in their hands. I was talking earlier about how it'll be incremental. It could be I'm wrong about that. It could be that the dictatorship may be so desperate that they may decide to just go for straight head-on gun raids, to just do anything they can to get those guns out of white hands, because, again, they know what's coming. But, yeah, it's going to be an appalling, ghastly mess for the next 4 years. At some point, we're going to have an unholy harmonic convergence of total financial collapse, the government running out of money, peak oil or energy costs just soaring through the roof to the point where we have $17 per gallon gasoline, possibly a Jewish attack on Iran, although that seems to have just slipped off the radar, but that could still happen. The legalization of all the immigrants and basically getting them on the welfare rolls so they can vote Democratic, states, cities, especially the blue states and cities, going completely bankrupt, yelling and screaming for the federal government to bail them out. When the federal government can't do that, they're going to start going for the last remaining private wealth, which is available, which is in the hands of white people. The Chinese have a curse that they level against their enemies. May you live in interesting times. It's coming.
Well, we're going to be living in interesting times, but I want to ask you a question, because you mentioned the hyperinflation that I think we're destined to endure, because that is really the hidden inflation tax, and that devalues everyone's labor, everyone's work. But what happens when the EBT card, the permanent underclass out there who lives off their EBT cards, white, black, and Hispanic of all colors, what happens when their $200 a month allotment per person only buys them 3 loaves of bread, and that's it? How are they going to respond to hyperinflation? What's going to be the reaction?
Well, they will do what basically non-whites do when their toys or their fix is taken away, whatever. They will riot. There will be a massive increase in just ordinary crime as blacks and the Mexicans come surging out of their ghettos and their barrios, attacking the white areas in the major cities, basically to get anything that they can sell, anything that they can eat if they can't get food. It'll probably start with things like attacking convenience stores, etc. You may have heard about the flash mobs that have been happening for the past few years. That's another thing that's quietly disappeared off the media radar. I think it's still going on, where a mob of about 60 to 100 blacks will assemble at a Walgreens or a grocery store, an Albertsons, something like that. They'll all descend on the store, just loot the store. And at first, when they started doing this, it was luxury goods, electronics, whatever. But now I noticed, or at least the last ones that were reported before the media stopped reporting this, they were hitting things like grocery stores. I know this was done to an Albertsons down there in Oregon about 6 months ago. And like I said, right about that time, the media simply stopped reporting these stories, but I'm convinced it's still going on. So in essence, you might say that the underclass, as you want to call it, were doing practice runs for what will happen when their EBT cards run out. We'll have attacks on sources of fuel, food, liquor, that sort of stuff, and then it will just spill over. How the local authorities will deal with it, I don't know, especially since by that time they probably won't be able to pay their police or their military. The possibilities are endless.
And I want to talk about this when we come back from this break. So because this is happening at the same time as they're disarming people from any means to defend themselves. We'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back. This is Mike Harris on the Jeff Rentz Radio Network, and we're on today with guest Harold Covington. Americans, white Americans, are being disarmed. At the same time, we're going to face unprecedented social unrest from the black and Mexican communities. You know, the numbers they've been giving us for the number of illegal aliens in this country has been stuck at 11 to 12 million for the last 15 years.
That's a lot.
I've heard numbers where it's closer to 50 to 100 million. No one knows for sure. And we're going to have a three-way tribal war in this country, maybe four, if you count the Muslim influence that's coming into like Dearborn and other cities like that. We're going to have, a very violent set of circumstances here. And I ask myself, who benefits out of sectarian violence? One guess.
And who benefits out of the white man being disarmed when the balloon really does go up? It's a complex thing, but another thing you have to understand about our present government and our present power structure is that they suffer from the same sickness that dictatorships and tyrants have always suffered from down through the ages. They overestimate their ability to control events. The liberal Democrats and the Jews and the whole liberal power structure believes that they are going to create this brave new world where everybody is equal to everybody else. Everybody has the same income.
I have to correct you on that. I don't think that's what their goal is. I think their goal is to turn everyone else into peasants and serfs while they, the Jews, rule over everyone from a position of power and authority where they see themselves as the new global aristocrats.
Mm-hmm. And you know something, Mike? We just described the same thing. I described it from the way they view it, and you described it from the way we will view it. They do not actually think that they're going to make everybody slaves. They think that they're going to bring a wonderful new age of equality. Of course, in actual practice, what they'll be doing is making everybody slaves or serfs or units of economic production, etc. But it's the same thing, really. The great melting pot, in their view, is to melt everything. And, of course, the Jewish and liberal elite will rule over this coffee-colored mass in sheer benevolence, of course. I mean, because they're just so smart, and they're just so good, and they just know what's good for everybody. Last time I was on, I talked about a movie called Telefon, about all these guys going out berserking, going and shooting people. There's another movie, I don't know if you've ever seen, again, from the 70s, it's called Soylent Green. Now, have you ever seen that one? But Soylent Green. Okay, well, what the Jews and the liberals and the Democrats are aiming for is, this, in essence, the world of Soylent Green. Everybody lives in cities packed in like sardines. Everybody lives on some kind of government dole or ration card, and so that the government can control people by controlling their food and their air and their every other darn thing. And, of course, in the big, huge luxury apartment blocks, the elite live with their luxuries, and they just, again, they're just so wise and so compassionate, and they just know so much better how everyone should live, and so they rule us all in this god-awful, that's the way they view it. The way we view it, of course, is that they're coming to enslave us and shove us all down into the slums with the blacks and the Mexicans and the garbage and the drug addicts. And it's basically, we're describing the same thing. It's just, you know, we're on the receiving end and they're on the dishing it out end, or so they think. But I don't think they can do it. I don't think that they really have the intelligence and the organization. Now, see, they've been undermining their own infrastructure. It's one of the great ironies that by, in essence, emasculating and disempowering the white male, the Jews and the liberals and the Democrats have lost their own enforcement arm. The military right now, a lot of the police, they're all black and Mexican or perverted. The technical end of things, the machines and the toys that keep their society going, were invented by white people. They have to be maintained by white people. And they're trying to substitute Asians, but that's not really working. And so what I think will happen is eventually some kind of collapse. The question is, what will happen to the white man when that collapse comes? In the case of the United States, it will be a Soviet-style breakup into various racial and ethnic enclaves, and the white man has to get his own enclave, I believe, here in the Pacific Northwest. They're not going to be able to create their brave new world. Basically, they don't have the chops for it. But that doesn't mean they're not going to try, and that doesn't mean they're not going to kill a lot of people, and they're not going to create untold havoc and destruction while they try to do it.
But that's what's a crying shame about it. They're so caught up in their own arrogance and their own self-superiority that they don't see the long-term plan. They suffer from groupthink as bad as any other group in the history of mankind has, and they don't see their own blind spots.
Yeah. The ruling class itself as well has factions within it, and the way I like to put it is both the Republicans and the Democrats want everybody dependent. They don't like independent white businessmen employing themselves or craftsmen making their own living. They want everybody to get a paycheck that can be controlled, and so that if somebody gets out of line, you just pull their paycheck, defunctionalize them from employment, and Bob's your uncle. The Republicans want everybody getting that paycheck from a big, huge multinational corporation. The Democrats want everybody getting that paycheck in the form of an EBT card or a welfare payment or whatever from the great benevolent state. So in that sense, yeah, there is a sort of an ideological conflict, and the statists, the Democrats, have finally figured out that if they're going to pay for all this, they need to grab the Republicans and the multinational corporations' wealth, and the Republicans, on the other hand, have finally figured out that if the Democrats are allowed to legalize these illegal aliens, that's it. They're toast as a party. So, yeah, there will be conflict within the system itself, which is basically not too good for normal white people, because when you've got a tyranny that is not only incompetent to begin with, but divided against itself, what you've got is chaos.
Well, I've got to go back to something you said there. You said that they want to grab the wealth of the white corporations and the, you know, the white taxpayers. But I don't think it's their intention to continue this welfare state once they've seized complete power. I think then everybody's going to be on bread and water, so to speak, including the blacks and the Mexicans.
It could be that you're right about that, Mike. I think that's, in a way, one of the scariest aspects of this. I think, basically, the power structure as it exists right now in this country, the Democrats, blah, 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 they have this vague idea of this vague utopia that they want to create, ruled over by Barack Obama, who will get, you know, elected to 15 terms as president, etc. But they don't really know the details. They don't really know what they're doing, and they really haven't any long-term strategy as to how they want to bring this about. I think we tend to overestimate just the competence of the people who rule us, and we have done for a long time. If you talk to anybody who's ever worked in the federal government or with the federal government, they will tell you that we are ruled by idiots. The sheer incompetence, the waste, the stupidity, the lack of planning, etc., is just notorious in our government. So that's what's scary to me, is that when it all falls down, it won't be because of any great rebellion or anything like that. It'll be just sheer incompetence. The whole house of cards will collapse because of its own weakness. And, of course, this actually, if you think about it, though, this is an opportunity for white people. Again, forgive me for quoting Lenin. I know people kind of tend to get confused about that, but someone once told the young Lenin that it was useless to try and overthrow the Tsar of Russia, that he was beating his head against a brick wall. And Lenin said, yes, but it's a rotten wall, and a few good kicks will send it down. Now, that is still possible. I believe the wall is going to go down. It's going to go down fairly soon. As I mentioned, a Soviet-style breakup. In the real world, the practical world, I think that's what's going to happen, and we have to prepare for that.
Well, that wouldn't be the worst of all worlds, particularly if a scenario could be followed as you outline in your books. I think that would be probably a best case on a really ugly, bad situation.
Okay, let's assume that my books are off base and that the Northwest Republic does not, for whatever reason, come into being. It's still possible that some form of local secession or autonomy could still work for white people if we could just get the federal government off our backs and revert to state and local government like the founding fathers intended. It is possible that we could work out some arrangement whereby the red states live their way and the blue states live their way, and of course the blue states would then collapse into complete total chaos. But this, I think, is the crux of these secession petitions and the secession. That's, by the way, that's another thing that has dropped completely out of sight in the media, all those people that wanted to secede after Obama was reelected. But if somehow or other that could be worked out, just get the federal government out of everything and let local people and people on the state level rule their societies and rule their lives like they want to in their communities, that would be at least a partial solution.
Well, it would, and I hear our music coming up in the background. Harold, it's a long break. You need to go grab a cup of coffee or something. Now's the time to do it. Be back in about 8 minutes, okay?
Okay.
Welcome back. This is the second hour of with Mike Harris on the Jeff Rintz Radio Network. Today is Monday, January 7th, 2013, and we're on with author and social commentator Harold Covington. Harold, let's go back in and let's look at what really is the corrosive element that is affecting all life, and not just whites in America, but it's affecting blacks too. And that is the influence, the Talmudic influence, which was transported here in 1933 when the Frankfurt School relocated from Germany into Columbia University at New York, and how they've rewritten everything that was established science, proven, what exists, And they reinvented everything and brought around a new way of thinking, which has been so toxic and so destructive, you know, from anthropology to psychology to everything now, that these pseudosciences that aren't real, that have been fabricated to get the desired result of that the Talmudists want for this country.
Yeah, the idea of racial equality, which simply has no basis anywhere in the real world. Not only are individuals within a race not inherently equal, neither are the races themselves of mankind equal. There are various reasons for this, which we can get into. I don't want to be here all night, but it's pretty clear that this whole philosophy of liberalism in race, in economics, and just about everything is based on ideas that aren't real. They're delusional. And when historians of a millennia from now actually write the history of these times, if any are left to write it, I think they will be astounded that for 100 years, Western civilization was able to embrace almost as a religion ideas which were just plain wrong, and which the evidence of their own eyes, their own experience, and their own senses should have told them were wrong. Blacks are not equal to whites in any significant mental or spiritual way. Physically, they may be larger, stronger, maybe could run faster, but so can a horse. And everything that makes a man a thinking, creative being, it is clear that Negroes are on a lower scale of evolution, development, however you want to put it.
Well, Harold, let's just take a moment to examine that, because it depends on the environment that they're meant to survive in. You know, you look at the Sherpas who live up in the Himalayas, and you take a white athlete up there or a black athlete up there. I don't care how fit you are, they don't perform well because of oxygen deprivation because of the altitude. You look at the blacks in Africa where they had to run fast and jump high, and that was a more important survival skill for them. So let's just say they've evolved along different paths to suit the environment they were in. I don't want to get into the name calling here, because I certainly can't play in the NBA, don't have the capability for it. But in token, if we can acknowledge that, maybe a guy like me is not qualified for that application, maybe someone else is not qualified to do what I do.
I have lived in Africa, in southern Africa, back in the days when it was still white controlled. In Rhodesia and in South Africa, I actually moved among proper Africans. I've seen them in the tribal trust lands in their own native environment, if you want to call it that. And without going off into a bunch of more stories or whatever, my observation is that as long as blacks are simply left alone to live in the Paleolithic way that they've been living ever since the dawn of time, they're tolerable. They're not necessarily super violent or super aggressive. They have their own ways and whatnot, but it is definitely a lower culture. It is a lower form of life.
Let's face the facts. They never invented the wheel.
Yeah.
Hutt is their greatest architectural achievement so far.
Yeah.
And this is my contention, is that these people need to be left to their own devices to find their own way in the world and to create their own culture and civilization as suits them, and not try to impose a culture upon them. And I really do believe in a separation. I think it would be better for all parties involved.
Right now, in large parts of Africa, they are being, quote-unquote, left alone. But unfortunately, there is now Western influence, there is Western technology seeping in, and they're riding around in pickup trucks with AK-47s, and when you introduce that disruptive element of white culture, white technology, and white ideas, and then just leave them alone to their own devices, they slaughter each other, and as we can see, the white man's medicine has enabled the African population to explode, and then when the white man left Africa, they had just countless millions and millions and millions of these blacks over there who could no longer feed themselves on the kind of subsistence agriculture that their ancestors had practiced. And so, frankly, I mean, I will give the liberals one point. Contact between the white peoples of the world and the black peoples of the world has been a disaster, all told, for the blacks. Trouble is, it's also been a disaster for the whites. It shouldn't have happened, but it did, and now we have to deal with this historical reality. But we're not going to be able to salvage anything for humanity if we don't start looking at this whole issue of race with some kind of reasonable and logical basis. And even people like Dr. Albert Schweitzer, who lived in Africa almost all of his adult life and who devoted his life and his career towards helping these people medically, always said, that there must be that distance. You can never, ever actually treat an African as an equal, because he is not, and if you try, you're headed for trouble. So we have to reassess our whole attitude towards race.
There are some fundamental differences here, and if you just look at IQ by country, and you pull up a country like Cameroon, Nigeria, the average IQ is 64. That's the average IQ. That means half of them are not that smart, but that's what their average is. And you look at here in the USA, I think our IQ is down to about 96 now because of our changing demographics. And you watch as the demographics change, our SAT scores continue to erode. Yeah. And people have to realize that demographics are destiny. If you want to live in a third world country, then keep bringing in a third world population, you'll get a third world country. But if you want to live in a first world technologically advanced country, then we have to be exclusional to these people who don't cut the mustard intellectually.
Once again, you're trying to apply common sense to an issue which the power structure has decreed we cannot apply common sense to. There are certain things that our present power structure has placed beyond discussion and beyond analysis. Now, you're talking about our lower scores in this country. The lowering of SATs and test scores in schools, etc., is directly proportional to the number of blacks and browns in those schools. And if you look at the whites and also to an extent at the Asians, you will find that their IQ scores and their test results generally are a lot better. Of course, not as good as they were, since the school systems themselves have been so badly dumbed down, and since especially white youth has been completely dumbed down, half of them can't even read anymore. But that's not the fault so much of their genes, it's the fault of the school system and the educational system and the whole liberal way of life that's failed them and turned them into Beavis and Butthead. It's, the intelligence may be genetic, especially with white people, but you do still have to have a strong, good Aryan culture and a society that supports and educates children properly, and a society that offers things like opportunity and intellectual freedom and so forth to develop and use these skills. This whole idea of racial equality probably is going to be, if I had to put my finger on the one thing that will destroy the world as we know it, that would be it. The Jews use it as a weapon to destroy white people whom they hate, and self-hating whites just wallow in it. Oh, don't get me started on that.
Well, I'll let you get started on it right after this this short break. We'll be right back in a couple minutes, folks. Stick with us. We're on with author Harold Covington today. We'll be right back. This is Mike Harris on the Jeff Rentz Radio Network. It's Monday, January 7th, 2013. And Harold, you know, we're fighting really a tough battle. And the main reason the battle is so hard for us is that we don't have the propaganda machine that the Zionist Jews have. They really have a magnificent one, both with Hollywood and with their mainstream media, that they control the news that people get.
Yep.
And it's possible to make an informed decision if you don't have information. And it's obvious they skew the data, and they skew the information that people get, and sometimes it's patently false.
This is one reason why shows like Rentz Radio and whatnot are so valuable. Slowly but surely, we are building up an alternate media. My Northwest Front Group has a pretty good website, and I've often figured that if we could just get enough people to come there, if we could get enough people to listen to my own podcast and so forth, we would bring in enough to have our Northwest Republic, because we don't need some big, huge majority of people to be actively with us. We just need enough people to be informed of the truth so that they will not actively oppose solutions, shall we put it that way?
Harold, let me just give you some numbers on this, because you can take 1% of the population and you take the square root of that, and that's what you need to begin a movement.
Mm-hmm.
By the time you have 3% of the population of an area, you've reached critical mass where revolutions are possible. And I don't want to talk about a revolution in our country. I've not given up on the USA yet. But I tell you, if they keep doing stupid things like this and trying to infringe the Constitution and infringe the Second Amendment, they're going to break the social contract with a guy like me who's never broken the law, and I will become a criminal, and I'm not going to go down easy. I'm sorry, I'm just not going to do it. I'm past my prime. I got nothing left to lose. You know what I mean? What a, you know, so you look at me, you look at my age, and I'm the most dangerous man because I'm no longer afraid of death and dying. I don't have a brilliant future ahead of me. If anything, they're going to be doing me a favor because I'll never be in the old folks' home wearing pins.
Well, of course, it could be that maybe that's one of the things that they're counting on. We'll give them an opportunity to eliminate some of us old codgers who remember the old ways and still have some of the old values. But there's an idea that revolution consists of mobs storming the Bastille and so forth. Maybe it did in 1789 in France, but I figure that of the people of the 13 colonies in 1776, roughly one-third of them more or less supported the Continental Congress in a half-assed kind of way. Another third of them more or less supported the king and the Tories, and the other third just didn't give a damn. They just went west. But the actual number of soldiers engaged on both sides in the American Revolution was tiny compared to the population. I mean, George Washington, one of his armies would typically be, you know, maybe 5,000 or 6,000 guys, which isn't much even by the standards of those days. And the Bolsheviks, when they took over in 1917 in Russia, it's estimated that they had approximately 8,000 full-fledged Communist Party members. So you don't need a mass movement. Now, sometimes...
Let me point out another statistic. 8,000 full-time Bolshevik Communist Party members were responsible for the death of 66 million innocent Christian white Russians. That's an obscene number.
Well, of course, they had a lot of fellow travelers and a lot of people who assisted them in various ways, but the actual hardcore of the Bolsheviks, again, I think that's the official estimate in 1917. Of course, after they seized power, their party grew, and you had all the people who were trying to basically get in with the new regime joining, so forth, that sort of thing. But the point I'm trying to get at here is that we don't need some kind of big, huge mass movement. Our society today is calibrated and prepared to withstand mass movements. Back in the end of Vietnam War days, the first moratorium was something like 250,000 people thronging Washington, D.C., which I think was the biggest demonstration in the country's history up to that point, and the government just ignored it. Democracy is fitted out and prepared to ignore mass movements. However, what they can't stand against is a small, fanatically dedicated minority who is not afraid of what they can dish out. That, you will find, is how most revolutions have, in fact, been carried out over the past century. There was always a small, dedicated minority leading the fight, engaging the fight, and organizing events. So, again, this is a very complex subject. I'm kind of dancing around here because I don't know exactly how much of this I can get into on the air here, but we don't need some big, huge, mass Rotary Club-style movement in order to change things in this country. We don't need to convert every single white person living in the Pacific Northwest to our point of view before we can have our own country and our own homeland here. I have lived in other countries that have been going through this type of thing. I've seen how it's done. The whole point I'm trying to get at here, Mike, is that it is possible for white people to change the world we live in if just a small number of us are willing to dedicate our whole lives towards bringing about that change. White people have to transmute their character to the point where they understand that the one overriding imperative in the world today is that the world must change. Everything has to be subordinate to that. Personal lives, personal desires, personal ambitions, personal pleasures. Everything has to be subordinated to that one central idea. The world must change. And I hear the music.
Yeah, I hear our music. We'll be right back.
Okay. All right.
This is Mike Harris on the Jeff Rents Radio Network, and today is Monday, January 7th, 2012, along with guest and author Harold Covington. Harold, welcome back. I didn't mean to cut you off, but we were going long there on our
That's okay. I have a tendency to rant and rave, so don't worry about it.
The points you make are very good. You've outlined 18 within your fictional novels, and what happens? You know, how are law-abiding Americans supposed to respond when really a criminal government, and that's how I fear our government has become since George W. Bush seized power in the year 2000 through a Supreme Court decree that he was now president. No, it's not a one-party system, it's not a two-party system, it's a one-party system, and they're both in on it. I mean, this whole thing has just been horrible. 9/11 was a psyop to compel Americans to accept this police state and get us engaged in foreign wars. And I really fear that we are being taken over by Israel and those who promote Israel in this world, as well as other criminals. I look at George H.W. Bush as being one of the great criminals of the 20th century, and hopefully he's going to pass soon, because it will not be a loss. Let him go answer to his maker for his crimes against humanity. But I look at this, I shake my head and say, everything I was told, everything I was brought up to believe and raise, we had checks and balances, that we had a system, that we were a stable democratic republic, it's all been a pack of lies that has been subverted, and it's being destroyed right before my very eyes. And mm-hmm. I want to leave this world a better place for my kid and for my posterity.
Right.
That's my only goal in life.
Well, the system that we inherited from our forefathers, the American constitutional system, etc., of course, there was one big glitch in the Civil War, but basically it was designed by and for white people. You will notice that a lot of the deterioration of the American form of government, the American way of life, if you want to call it like that, started in 1965 when they threw out all the immigration restrictions, and all of a sudden we, in essence, began the process of becoming a third world country. When you bring in third world people, you get a third world society, a third world government, and we now have a third world tyrant ruling over us. Now, as far as what we have to do, white Americans very quickly are going to be faced with an immemorial choice, a choice that countless generations of people down through time in various countries, various places around the world have had to face up to. And that is, at what point does tyranny become absolutely insupportable to the point where they will take up a weapon in their hand and resist? Now, we get a lot of these Second Amendment types, gun collectors and gun people, vowing and swearing that when the thugs in the body armor and the flashing LED lights show up outside their house to take their semi-automatic rifles, they will resist. And let's be clear here, they will actually load those semi-automatic rifles and fire on federal agents. This is what we're talking about here when we refer to resistance. We're not talking about tapping on a keyboard of a computer or writing a congressman. Now, we have a lot of people who are vowing and swearing that they will actually resist physical confiscation of their weapons. Will they? I don't know. Maybe I'm just depressed, or maybe I'm just pessimistic after 40 years of working in this movement and having heard so much generated in the way of words and so seen so little in the way of action, but all I can say is that I hope they will. This is an example that the white race as a whole has to have. But what we're talking about here, realistically speaking, is more Wacos and more John Singers and more Gordon Calls. We're talking about one or two lone little people surrounded in a house, farmhouse, or a ranch house someplace, getting bombarded with tear gas and automatic weapons fire by hundreds of ATF and FBI agents, etc., etc. Now, after one or two examples like that, will the rest of them also still resist? I don't know. We'll have to see. But as I say in my novels, this isn't going to free us. Now, maybe they can give us heroic examples. In fact, in my novel series, the Northwest Revolution is kicked off by one such heroic example, Gus Singer. When Hillary Clinton's It Takes a Village people come for his children, Gus resists with force of arms, and his neighbors stick their own rifle barrels out of their houses and start firing on the feds as well. It would take something like this to ignite a genuine revolution, because a lot of white people feel the way that we do, Mike. They know that things are wrong. They know that this world they live in, this country, this government, all this mess, it just isn't right. But they're waiting for someone else to go first. Now, in my novels, the Singer family and their sacrifice constitutes that going first. They have an uprising in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, which is the equivalent of the Irish 1916 Easter Rebellion, and the revolution proceeds from there. Could it happen that way? Yes, it could. Will it happen that way? I don't know. But the trouble is that white people as a whole, especially white males, have lost what I call the alpha gene, that ability to go first. I admit, I'm having trouble persuading people to pack up their goods into a U-Haul trailer and come here to the Northwest because nobody wants to go first. I get this reaction from a lot of people. Well, Harold, hey, that sounds like a good idea. Let me know when you get something set up there and I'll come on up there. They're waiting for somebody to set out the picnic tables and the cakes and ale for them, and no one is willing to go first. Well, a few people are. Now, I'm having some success. But it's disappointing to see just how few people really are willing to go first, to be like the old pioneers, pack all their duds in a covered wagon or a U-Haul truck and just hit the road for the Northwest. We seem to have lost that genuine pioneer spirit. Now, maybe it's just sleeping. Maybe it can be revived. Maybe economic necessity will do it. Maybe all of a sudden our website will go viral and we'll get a million hits in a month and people will start packing for the Northwest. I hope so. That's what we're aiming for. But the main problem, Mike, seems to be one of the white man's character. I keep emphasizing to my own people this character issue. We have to become the kind of men and women that our great-grandparents were. We have to somehow delete the past 60 years of liberal, left-wing, Judaic crap that's been spoon-fed into our brains until we have skulls full of mush. And I'm ranting and raving again, aren't I? But anyway, you get the
idea. Well, I see you're doing quite well, but I just want to ask a question. Let's look at global events. Let's look at what happened in Egypt, in Tahrir Square. Let's look at what's happened in Greece. Let's look at what's happening in Spain. Mm-hmm. And somehow those people, unarmed, are going out and bringing about meaningful change and getting new government. How come we can't do it here? What are the things that I advocate for?
Well, those are Arabs and Europeans.
Let's get every American who owns a firearm to go on a peaceful, an armed peaceful demonstration, surround every state capital, surround, occupy the Washington Mall, fully armed Americans are going to go out and say, take our guns, come on, let's see you do it now. And we will overwhelm the system. There's no way that they could resist that. But keep it peaceful until the blue gang starts firing on the demonstrators, and then they'll have a Donnybrook.
The trouble is, you can't get Americans to do that, not in any significant numbers. That's what I mean about we just seem to have lost that alpha gene. I know something of the history about this country, especially the South where I grew up. And back in the old days, if there was a problem, be it black attacking a white woman or whatever, I mean, you could sort of snap your fingers and you would get a mob of angry white men going out on the streets or down into Frogtown or wherever it had to be done and taking care of the problem. That used to be an American tradition. We just don't do it anymore.
Nope, we've been told to trust the process and trust law enforcement to do it. The bottom line is the process is broken. The process doesn't work or hasn't worked in decades. And we're still being told to trust the process, let it go. And really, all government is local, and we need to do this on a localized basis and then grow from there. But I think working to reform your city or county that you're in and work very hard towards that end. And like I said, the county sheriff has a remarkable amount of power. He is the constitutional law enforcement authority in that county, and none of the federal agencies can operate there without his explicit permission.
Mm-hmm. Thing is, Mike, this is a problem that this is a question, put it that way, that I'm trying to get certain strong conservatives, neoconservatives, to answer for themselves. They say, okay, fine, we need to form a Tea Party, we need to, write a congressman, we need to have demonstrations, we need to vote in good candidates for the Republican Party, blah, 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 blah. And I ask these people, okay, now let's say you do all this stuff. What are you going to do when the Democrats, the ruling party, simply tells you, screw you. We're not going to do this. You're going to do what you're told. This is what happened with these secession petitions. Hundreds of thousands, I think over a million Americans signed these petitions asking for peaceful secession in the weeks after Obama's reelection, and they were simply ignored. I'd love to get somebody like Rush Limbaugh in a corner, pin him down, and say, Rush, let me ask you something. What are you and your kind going to do when at long last you realize that there is no peaceful legal solution to face up to this question? What are we going to do when it becomes crystal clear to us in some way that we simply cannot ignore any longer that the government of the United States has no intention of playing by their own rules, and that they are simply not going to allow peaceful and legal change. They have the power, and they are not giving it back. And if we move outside the box anywhere, we're going to get slapped down and destroyed. That is called tyranny. What will white America do when we are faced with that final realization that we have two choices? We can bow our heads, get down on our knees, and basically grovel before the tyrant and say, please, please don't hurt us. We will do what you say. We will obey you. We will give you our children. We'll give you our money. We'll give you whatever you want. Just please don't hurt us. Or will we stand up and take up that weapon in our hand and resist? What choice will we make? And I'm talking about the real world here now. I'm not talking about theoretical on a talk show or on a computer screen. I'm talking about it's 11 o'clock at night and you look out the window and you see the flashing LED lights outside your door. What are you going to do? That is the choice that all of us are going to have to make. I hope and I pray that white Americans will make the right one, and that if nothing else, even if we do perish from the face of the earth, that at least we'll let these bastards know that they've been in the fight. And I'm off on my tangent again, but that's basically what I'm trying to say, because we have to make that choice.
No, I understand, but what's going to be the seminal event? What's going to happen? Is it if someone pulls up, hypothetically, the SWAT team comes in and they're at my neighbor's place, and I know this guy, but in the same place, I've known him for umpteen years. Am I going to sit back and let him be hauled off in chains and his guns taken from his hands and have him forcibly disarmed? Or am I going to give the SWAT team something to think about from the other side of the street? That's a question that I want to plant that seed out there in the listeners, because there may come a day when you observe this happening to someone you know and someone in your neighborhood, someone in your community. When it happens to them, remember, next week it may be you. Mm-hmm. And so people have to ask themselves, have to deal with this type of reality. That is what our criminal government is forcing upon the American people right here in real time on a daily basis. It's happening. I want to go back to 1963, November 20th, before Kennedy was murdered. That's what I want to go back to and see if we can change history that way. But I don't know how to do that. All I know is how to deal with what we have to do with today. And Harold, I don't see any real good choices other than either submit or fight. That's all I see.
That's going to be it. And we don't fully understand yet that that is coming. Too many white people still, despite everything, think of this as our government. They think of them as our police. The noble, brave FBI that we see on TV rounding up serial killers and bad guys. They're our guys. No, they're not. They work for an uncouth third world tyrant. And they are coming to the street near you, to your homes, to your communities. When they come to hurt you, to do you and your family harm. And we have to understand this. They are the soldiers of tyranny. And unless we do understand it, we're not going to be able to survive. We've had some very public examples of this. Waco, where they burned children alive. Ruby Ridge, where they shot down a mother with her baby in her arms in the doorway of their cabin. At what point will white people get this, that we are living in a tyranny and eventually we have to make the choice? Literally, are you going to be a slave, disarmed, and living off whatever paycheck the system decides to give you forever and ever, you know, ad infinitum? Or are you going to fight to keep that rifle in your hands and to create some kind of freedom for yourself, even if it's only the freedom of a glorious death in the service of what is right?
Well, Harold, this past weekend I had the opportunity to watch the full uncut version of Mel Gibson, The Patriot. Mm-hmm. And nothing has changed. It's the same thing as it was back then, only it's now. You know, 230-something years later. And here we are. We're faced with the same thing. People are trying to dictate and trying to dominate and just want a tyranny. Just tell everyone how to live and what to do. And I, for one, say no. I was born a free man. I'm going to die a free man.
Well, this very situation that we have here in the year 2013 is why the founding fathers of this nation put that Second Amendment into the United States Constitution, so that when this time came, when Americans found themselves being ruled by an emperor, a tyrant, a dictator, that they would have the necessary wherewithal to do what the Founding Fathers themselves did and resist by force of arms. I don't think the Founding Fathers realized just what total wimps and wusses their descendants would turn into be. If you were to confront George Washington and Thomas Jefferson with Beavis and Butthead, they'd just sort of, what? You know, but we need to decide now whether or not the Founding Fathers made the right choice. They've given us everything we need to free ourselves and to overturn this situation, but it's useless if we don't use it. We've had these guns for years, and they've sat there rusting in the closet. We need to decide if that's going to continue. And it's not a choice that's going to have to be made on a computer or in theory. It's a choice that's going to have to be made at midnight some night with the flashing lights outside the door. So we all need to think right now and decide right now what we're going to do when they come for you.
But really, this is a serious subject, Harold, because everyone is going to have to make a mental decision and prepare for the event when it happens to them. Because they're not going to knock your door. They're going to use that big thing that you guys swing, that big pipe tube, and they're going to knock your door in. They're going to toss a couple of flashbangs in, and you're blind and you can't hear and see. And then they're going to come in, and if you even look like you're going to move, they're going to kill you. And they've been practicing this for a long time, and that's what's going to happen. So
dynamic entry,
Yeah, everyone is going to have to make a decision as to how to respond when that happens. And so I don't want to encourage violence against the government. I want our government not to commit violence against the citizens.
Well, now, we have this prohibition within the movement, or I refer to the larger right wing as a whole. For many years, there's been a taboo against speaking of direct armed resistance against these tyrants. We can't even speak about it. We can't talk about it because, oh, you must be an agent provocateur. You're trying to, you know, stir up trouble. You know, oh, you'll get us in trouble if you talk about that. Oh, no, we must only use legal means, et cetera, et cetera. And now we're seeing the results of that. From what I can judge from the media, this time they really are serious about seriously coming for, if not all the guns, at least a lot of the guns. They want to basically take the white population back to revolvers and bolt-action rifles. And then, of course, once they get all the semi-autos, then they'll come for the revolvers, the shotguns, and the bolt-action rifles. But we have to remove the taboo in our own minds against thinking about these things, against speaking about these things. In the years before the American Revolution, we had men like Patrick Henry getting up on the floor of the Virginia House of Burgesses, speaking quite openly of armed resistance against the Crown. Now, when men like Henry and John Adams and Washington and Jefferson spoke of these things, everyone knew what they were talking about. They were not talking about sending a petition to London to ask the king to be nice. So that, I think, is, if nothing else, hopefully my novels can help with that, removing the taboo against speaking and thinking and discussing direct action.
I think that's something we have to overcome, and we have to look at a paradigm change in the minds of Americans. And it's time that we change our thinking. Is going to have to happen very quickly because we don't have much time. This Feinstein woman is on a mission, and she's on a mission to disarm this entire country. And her buddy Schumer, the senator from Tel Aviv, is right behind her. And I'm sorry, but I'm not going to let them disarm me. They're going to have to come take it. And maybe this is all just cheap talk. The good news is I have not been drinking. I am sober. But I'm not going to let them infringe the Second Amendment. And they're holding their offices, both of them.
Well, I know we're kind of running out of time here. One quick suggestion I might make. Maybe you can float this on some of the other shows on Mensch Radio, et cetera, et cetera. I'm just curious almost to just see what kind of reaction we get. But let's say somebody starts a massive online petition, one of those White House sites or anywhere, and call it The Pledge. All gun owners in America are asked to sign The Pledge, and The Pledge is one simple sentence. I hereby swear by my sacred honor that I will resist by force of arms any attempt on the part of the government of the United States to confiscate or otherwise deprive me of my privately held firearms. Something simple like that. Basically, what you're doing is you're swearing in public that when the SWAT teams and the guys in the black body armor come for your guns, you will actually fire on them. And I'm curious to know how that would be received by the right wing as a whole, by the government, or even if it could get off the ground. of course, because anybody that actually signed the thing would be, in essence, asking to be put on a list and be pursued by the secret police, et cetera, et cetera. But it's an interesting idea. You might want to just float it in some of the...
Well, Harold, the thing of it is that most people are already on some sort of a list anyway.
Yeah.
And I don't care how law-abiding you are. I don't care if you pay your taxes on time. I don't care if you vote Democratic or voted on the for the Democrat Party. You're still on the list, brother. Everybody's on the list. And they're looking at everybody. They've got this NSA computers. They've got that FBI carnivore program. All of the stuff is going through every email, every text, every phone conversation, all being done, and you have been charted, cataloged, and you are in your slot as to how big of a risk you are.
The FBI now admits publicly that they have archived every single email ever sent in this country by anybody since late September 2001 when they instituted the carnivore program. They haven't read them all. Nobody could do that. It's, you know, trillions of emails. But they actually have it all archived. And anything you've sent an email about in the past 12 years, they've got. Anyway, I hear the music.
Well, Harold, thanks for out of time already. I appreciate you coming on. And
anytime.
I'll invite you back again because we cannot let them take our guns, because that is the last defense we have against a tyrannical government. And by golly, I'm going to live and die as a free man. I hope you all share that commitment. Thank you all very much. This is Mark Harris.
Okay.
We'll be in tomorrow with Jared Taylor from Yale University. All right. Thanks, Harold. Have a good day.
I really don't mind what happens now and then.